Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Maybe on the flip side to that coin, you've got the Tanner's conclusion. I know, you know, the Tanners aren't God. None of us are. But they know a lot. And they've concluded here that even Masonic scholars and historians admit that the Masonic rituals do not originate in Solomon's temple in Jerusalem, as the Masonic legend relates, but were an outgrowth of the European Builders Guild of the late Middle Ages. This weakens the Mormon belief that the endowment ritual was given to Adam in the Garden of Eden. It seems much more obvious that Joseph Smith used basic elements from the 19th century Masonic ritual, and the Mormon endowment ritual is not ancient at all. So I guess that's the other side to it. Some people will say, well, that proves that it's tosh, and you're saying obviously it doesn't matter.
There is another element too. I mean, I used to, this was something that was a real interest to me, you know, when I was studying ancient history. And I remember calling, when I was working on my dissertation, I remember calling Laura up from the library, the university library, and kind of whispering to her, I've just found this Egyptian scroll that is amazing. And I can't tell you about it because it's showing things from the temple, but it's fantastic. And you know, and I took it home. Well, sorry, I'm saying that it was a scroll. Was it a scroll? Yeah, it was. It was the
Book of Breathings.
It was it was the papyri, the funerary papyri of Nessie Parker Shooty. If you want to check, I've got a copy of it. If you want to cut, if anybody wants a copy,
Google
of
it now.
I can show you, and it was, and it just blew my mind at the time, and I had this really strong belief that you could create. And I still do believe this. You can create the Mormon endowment from ancient sources. However, and this is me now kind of on the other side of things, trying to be a little bit more balanced and fair. When we do this, it only works if we ignore all the things that don't match.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? There are, I can show you a papyrus that has got the deceased doing various different signs from the Mormon endowment, and you can look at that and go, wow, there we go, it's ancient origin. But then that same papyrus will also show somebody with the head of a crocodile, you know, or something else.
Didn't you get to do that at the temple?
No, that's a different ceremony. I haven't done that one yet. But that's how it works. It works when you ignore all the things that don't match up.
Yeah, it's like the church's,
but yeah, sorry.
It's like the church's bullseye theory. Joseph got one thing perfectly right, but there were 30 other things around it that he was off on. But he got one thing, bullseye. So it must be true. Is that kind of?
Had you already come across Hugh Nibley making those connections with ancient stuff and doing the parallels and so on at that point, or did you find that independently of him?
What? Who? Sorry, Hugh.
We have hundreds of blooming Hugh Nibley books just over there. Yeah.
Yeah. So what I have checking.
Had he switched you on to looking for those things there, then? Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. You know, and I did a degree in archaeology and ancient history, and, you know, and that was heavily and I loved it, you know, I'm not bemoaning that, but it was heavily influenced by the church and the stuff that I'd been reading at the time.
And
Indiana Jones as well. kept the whip.
The apologists today, though, and in a sense having to jump through the same hoops now that they have accepted all this history, that yes, of course, Joseph, you know, you got the Givens calling Joseph Smith an eclectic syncretist, you know, trying to the best spin they can put on accepting the reality of this real history of the endowment and the Book of Mormon and all that stuff and the parallelomania, is to somehow turn that into a positive, which is kind of what you're offering, Julian. What we're saying is we have to reframe our concept of Mormonism. We have to reframe it from this is a genuine literal restoration of ancient rituals as they were. And the LDS Church clearly doesn't believe that for a nanosecond, because they have changed everything about the endowment. Almost every component of it has been messed about with, and they're still tinkering with it. And President Nelson has now just declared point blank that they have the right to change it any way they feel like in the future. He said that publicly with no justification, no theological framework, just it's an ongoing thing. There will be more changes. So this is, you know, what we're discussing here really is the car crash of this literal, we are a restoration of ancient stuff from the Old Testament era, belief of fundamentally or of basic foundational Mormonism, to how can we nuance this up now? My personal view is we absolutely can have a Mormon kosher framework for this, in that the whole idea of Mormonism at its best is meant to be that we're on a very long journey of learning, that we find all the information we can from everywhere, all the wisdom, that we see through a glass darkly. We have no idea yet what God really is, and we're reaching towards it. And that ritual and metaphor and we've still got many more things to learn. It's in our articles of faith. There are yet to be many things revealed and explained. And if we truly embrace that, we stop playing this stupid game of, nothing can change. You know, that Mormonism is we become like the Pharisees, where you must not change anything. We're going to be Orthodox Jews and we'll keep adding to things to keep it in the past, rather than being able to reframe it like the reform movements do within Judaism and other religions. So I just find it interesting that how we're bouncing around here between how can we still find value in the endowment, even though we know it is heavily plagiarized from Masonry and so on. My personal journey with this is that growing up as a kid, Masonry was terrifying. It was this sinister conspiracy going on. There were scandals in the news and in politics in the 70s and 80s that everyone knew that all the police chiefs in the country were Freemasons, and they were keeping themselves extremely secretive. And there was these big discussions in Parliament about whether they, and I think they did pass some laws that the senior police officers had to leave Masonry if they were going to continue to serve. I don't know if I remember that entirely accurately, but it was that fear and terror of this completely mysterious organization that was very much keeping its secrets. These days, you've got series on television, you know, being very open about what they do and trying to demystify, which is exactly what the Mormons are doing about the temple now. So it's really interesting. There's this parallel. They've learned from Freemasons how to completely reconfigure the fear and suspicion about them by opening the doors and showing people joining Masonry. And so my first sort of car crash with this was on my mission, where one of the branch presidency and the branch one over in Alabama was a Freemason. And one of the people I baptized was a Freemason, I found out. And I'm like, hang on a minute. Here we are in the Bible Belt, and there's all these Christian Freemasons. How does that even work? And then you start to find out there are Mormon Masons. And what's happened bizarrely, like completely to my amazement, is I've made good friends with an American guy, family man in Utah, who loves Masonry and Mormonism and is heartbroken at what the church is doing to the endowment, to end it as a live endowment experience, to take out all the things that actually make it truly meaningful, because they're neutering it of all the rich ingredients that Freemasonry brings to Mormonism. And they're slowly filtering it out, as we've said, to just make it a cookie cutter McDonald's chore to go to the temple, not the mystical encounter with God and the philosophy behind it all. There's so much rich symbolism there that we can adore. And then it started to happen to the Brits. One of my buddies who I was in Sunbeams with as a three-year-old has left the church, and it absolutely embraced Freemasonry. He's having a whale of a time with it. He loves it. One of the members of my previous ward, a young guy, has become a Mason. And I think he's sort of bounced back between activity. I don't know. But the point is, they are finding in Freemasonry what they used to have in the church, in the sense of fraternity, deep philosophy, challenging intellectual thought about the meaning of life and your purpose and value associated with ritual, which we used to offer. And they're now literally Mormons going back to Freemasonry in the raw to find it and actually develop much further. Because the other sort of the final thing I mentioned here is the another epiphany I've had is how utterly unelaborate the temple endowment is compared to Masonry. It is totally vanilla. Freemasonry itself involves learning books and books of knowledge, extremely elaborate rituals, you know, up the get-go. And all we can manage is a little bit of embroidery on an apron. And that's kind of it. You know, it's extremely pared down. So, which also in a way begs questions, well, why? You know what? And this is one thing Joseph Smith did. He simplified things. He simplified stuff. He took Catholicism and Protestant ritual, simplified it to the bare minimum, bread and water, no special clothing particularly, simple prayers, simple rituals for baptism, no incense and smells and bells. And even when he dipped his toe into the elaborate, the temple endowment, particularly today, obviously it's more neutered than it was still very much a very simple, pared down, minimalist sort of version of some of the few points that he picked up from Masonry. It is, you know, it's, and yet when we go to the temple, it's still a shock because it is so elaborate compared to our normal Sunday stuff. You know, it's this whole spectrum that we're juggling, you know, and dropping on the floor and breaking at the moment as a religion.
Well, Auntie Queenie agrees with you. Masonry is meaningful experience when the Mormon temple is empty. Did anyone else hear the explanation? This is what I was told in my youth, why loads of older Mormons were Freemasons and why a lot of the leaders of the church were. And it was because there were Masonic lodges all over the United States and Europe. And when the brethren were traveling, there wasn't always places to stay. So if they were Masons, they could always go to the local lodge. And it was more of a...
I never heard that. Really?
Yeah, that's what I was... That was how it was explained to me.
Yeah.
Like, why are they Masons and Mormons? And that's why we don't have Masons... Why all the brethren aren't Masons now, maybe. Because we've got hotels.
They can just stay at Marriott.
Yeah,
I've not heard that. It is interesting. You've definitely got that idea. Is definitely true of Joseph's time. Joseph became a Mason because it was useful. It was handy for him to become a Mason. It would offer a certain degree of protection. You know, a time where they've been driven from place to place.
That's what we were taught. That's definitely what I was taught as a kid. It was just playing the system to protect the church from the powerful. Yeah.
Before he was shot, he gave the Masonic sign of distress.
About to say,
You know,
Lord, my God.
Exactly. You know, and we don't, you know, when we talk about that in church, we don't call it out for what it was. It was a Masonic sign of distress because there were probably Masons there in the crowd, in the mob. This was his way of saying, hey, guys, I'm one of you. You're supposed to help me. You're supposed to protect me.
Yeah, because it was like a thing that if you're in war and another Mason says to you, like the thing, oh, Lord, my God, is there no help for the widow's son? Then that is, you know, you're supposed to like switch sides. You're supposed to help the person. Even if you're on the other side in the war, in the Civil War or whatever, you're supposed to help that person because the fraternity of Masonry comes first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is interesting as well, isn't it? When you consider the fact that, so there are tokens in Masonry that are, that allow you to recognize a Mason. So when you meet somebody, you can give this token. Sorry, I'm using very vague language because I want to be respectful both of Masons and Mormons. You know, you can give a token that will allow you to recognize another another Mason, a fellow Mason. And that's where this idea of kind of corruption in the police and other things comes into it, you know. But the idea is also that that's a good thing. You know, we have that, obviously, in Mormonism. I've definitely experienced this. You meet somebody else that is a Mormon, can be a complete stranger to you, but you will trust them more and you will afford them more of your time. And, you know, that's just human nature, isn't it? So there's that element within Masonry. Now, we have tokens in the Mormon endowment that in a similar way are used to help us to kind of recognize somebody that is that has been endowed or initiated or whatever, but we don't use it except in the temple. And I wonder whether that was always the case when there was this urgency in the early church to endow all of these missionaries before they go out into the world, to empower them in some way. And that is something similar to what you were saying there, PD, but that is something that they could have gone from town to town and identified themselves in this way that would have got them, you know, got them an in with Masons and afforded a level of help.
It's a bit of an insurance policy, isn't it? Mm. A bit of extra security.
Okay, I don't think I'm out of line showing this image, okay? Everyone's going to shoot me. So people who know will know. But this was an image that showed up in the news, okay, of Thomas S. Monson meeting George Bush.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
At least George Bush is a well-known Mason. And they're meeting and greeting one another as Masons, okay? I won't say how I know that is. There has been...
Just watch the eyebrows.
Yeah, it's the eyebrows. So people who know will
it's
know.
The way Henry B. Eyring's looking at him.
Yeah, but they're greeting each other as Masons. And that's the thing, you know? If the president of the Mormon Church greets the president of the United States and they've got that fraternity, then it breaks the ice straight away. And, you know, there's benefit there, social benefit. So, okay, we'll leave George alone to go play with himself. And then we'll get to our final slide. Joseph Smith's opinion on changes. So taken from the August 2001 Ensign on page 24 in bold print above a large colorful portrait of Joseph Smith. The prophet Joseph Smith taught ordinances instituted in the heavens before the foundation of the world in the priesthood for the salvation of men are not to be altered or changed.
And this is the if you go in, we don't have this again in the UK and not so much in Europe, maybe a bit more in Europe, but over in the States you have a lot of other restoration movements, fundamental community. I'm not talking about FLDS with a big F. I'm talking about FLDS with a little F, fundamental Mormons. And they've got their own temples. And for a while, some of them would use LDS temples. But as things change more and more, some of them have now built their own and they're using their own temples and have tried to, as much as possible, use something that was much more akin to Joseph's endowment because of that exact quote, because they believe that nothing should have been taken away from the original endowment.
And that is where we're going to come to a close this evening, because I think that is we've given a high level view of possibly maybe some of the reasons for the endowment coming into play and the development of the endowment. As I say, Mormon scholars and ex-Mormon scholars will do a much better job and could do hours and hours and hours on just those topics. But what we want to do is to just kind of do a high level review of the, you know, the main talking points and have it all in one place for people to discuss. So that's what we're doing. We're going to end there in Nauvoo. Next time, in a couple of weeks, hopefully, we will pick up with the church and the temple in Salt Lake City and how Brigham Young impacted upon the temple ceremony with the lecture at the Veil, etc., and how that changed just a few years after Joseph shuffled off this mortal coil. But guys, do we have any closing remarks? Is there anything that you feel you want to add?
Yeah, I want to know the results of the poll.
We'll get there. Well, just before, Julian, at the moment, as might be expected, 69% of people said no, they didn't enjoy the temple. 31% of people said they did. Everyone can vote. If you're on YouTube, go and do that. Like and subscribe at the same time. But yeah, we'll close that in a moment after we've done final thoughts. But you might expect with an ex-Mormon audience that you get a lot more no's than yeses.
I still think 31's fair to have a third of people that were happy or comfortable enough to say that they did, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it was never my bag, but I appreciate that people find things in there.
Julian.
Yeah, I just wanted to kind of, for full disclosure, you know, I don't believe that, in fact, just in case it, because you know, I think it's important to be positive, and I want to be positive, but for people that might not know, you know, I don't believe that the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is true, or that Joseph Smith was a prophet, or that the temple endowment was given to him by God. I think, you know, there might have been some inspiration in there. I probably don't really believe that there is a God, and or if there is, he's as likely to be some computer programmer sitting in his bedroom
actually just scared Peter off.
I literally had to do some fox shouting.
And there is, love your fox watch, Peter. And there is part of me that wants the whole thing, the whole Mormon church and religion generally to just go away. Yeah. Because I think there are some things that are fundamentally bad about it and problematic. But I also want to, you know, when I can acknowledge the good and the benefit that is there. And so, you know, I think this idea of Joseph, you know, saying that they shouldn't change. Well, they should change. They should change. And the at the heart of it should be utility. Should be, you know, how does this help human beings? How does it help the people that are going through this experience? And I think there are things that could be beneficial from it. Unfortunately, I think a lot of those things that we did have been stripped away. And I think, you know, it would, you know, it could be a much better experience for people that went there. And I think that's a good thing for those that do still believe. I think it could be helpful.
Awesome. Because you were really talking earlier, like you wanted the temple back and you were about to go like bang on the door for a temple recommend like they want you to.
I've been told by Elder Turley to get there. Yeah. He has been a week.
Peter.
Hi, just three quick things. So one, the Jewish font is called a mikveh, M-I-K-V-E-H. And it involves full immersion, and it's part of cleansing rituals that can happen throughout your life at different points or for a convert. So which raises for me, it's been really interesting, the idea of Joseph Smith did have quite a close relationship with one or two Jewish visitors who he learned a lot from at various points. So maybe he actually picked up some of that temple stuff, not just from, because that's not in Masonry as far as I know. That maybe he it was his conversations with traditional Jews that introduced some of that to him. So that could be one of the sources there, because that's the theme there. The other is August the 9th at last is the release date for a book called Method Infinite, which is meant to be like the ultimate analysis of the relationship between Freemasonry and Mormonism and the temple. Wow. It's been in the offing for several years. Really high level academic Mormon Masons and Mormons have been working on it. So it's actually happening August the 9th. It's going to be released on Amazon. I think my third point is I think the fact that so many people can find out all about this online, and they are literally doing surveys referencing people, you know, the details from the church in their surveys of what are your, why do you feel weird about the temple? Is it the Masonic links, things like that? Plus that this book is about to be published and we'll introduce a lot more sort of focus on it in academic communities, which the Mormon insider intelligentsia are very aware of, you know, the church's own historians. Surely this is part of the reason to come full circle to why this month's Enzyme has this emphasis on being a bit more open and honest about what goes there and trying to demystify it, trying to get somehow ahead of the curve and start to frame it as not sinister people casting superstitious spells on you, but a sort of a ritual methodology for something much less scary, you know, which is the general apologist approach now. So I think we're in a really interesting moment, you know, regarding the temple. They're being spammed across the earth and they're going to end up closing because no one can go to them. They're trying to demystify them. They're showing temple garments from a few years ago on YouTube things because they're desperate to stop the church seeming so weird. In doing so, they're killing the goose that lays the golden eggs. They're killing the mystical, immersive, shared theater in the round experience of a live endowment. There will be no more live endowments now. Nelson has stopped them in Manti and Salt Lake, and he's literally destroyed the Salt Lake Temple, gutted it of all of its art, and it's going to be a Mac temple like the others. So this is a moment to really consider, what does the temple even mean to Mormons anymore? How are we going to interact with it? What should it be? What are we losing in this rampant destruction of it ritually and physically, artistically, the whole thing? And we need to decide as a religion, do we really care about it and want it? Do we even understand why we got it in the first place? And what are we about to lose? And is it too much? And will it kill the church even faster? Good
thank
topic,
you
PD.
Thank you, Nemo.
Yeah, man.
I would like to make a prediction. I think there are going to be some fundamental changes to the endowment, or certainly to the way that members access the temple moving forward. I know that Julian said he's not sure that they really care about getting more people in. I think there's some truth to that. I think temples are very much a symbol of power for the church. If you put a temple somewhere, it's a sign of a signal of intent. And they have lots of people move to that area. See, the Lord told us to put something here to prepare for the influx of members, even though the influx of members was caused by the building of the temple. There's a lot of that sort of stuff that's going to be going on. But I also think they don't want temples to sit empty. I think a temple sitting empty will talk about it if no one else, you know, people will talk about it if temples are empty. So I think we're going to see some changes. I'm not sure quite what form they'll take, whether something like a short veil ceremony would allow you to go and spend time in Celestial Room, whether they become more open to people, or they start to encourage people to come and spend time in Celestial Room, even if they've only done baptisms, or even if they've only done some washings and anointings, whether they're going to take some of the emphasis off the endowment. I don't know.
I know what it is.
What?
I know what it is. So they're going to say that the temple is the only place where you're allowed to drink alcohol.
Magic mushrooms.
Yeah. That's it. That's the chain.
Okay.
I think we'll see that. And I think, but I think the thing that won't go will be the necessity of tithing to enter the temple. I think prophets will hold on to that with their cold, dead hands before they
look. I thought you were gonna say that was gonna go. No. I was gonna say
no.
Interestingly,
it's
that
always gonna be pay to play.
Yeah, that was one of the earliest requirements as well.
Yeah.
Word of wisdom, obviously not, but tithing was
always gonna be pay to play, because that is far more fundamental, I think, than we sometimes realize to the Mormon experience, this idea that it is transactional, that you give money in return for status within the church.
Yeah. Well, thank you everyone for coming, and for everyone who has stayed with us until this point, you will now be rewarded with a story from the temple from PD. But nice. Before I do, let us remind you the 100 likes, we're on 39 likes at the moment. Everyone, the YouTube algorithm is a wicked woman. who hates me and always puts my videos right at the bottom. So if we all click the like button, she will put me at the top. Thank you. Also, PD has 989 subscribers. The 1,000 mark with YouTube is a big mark, because that means your account can change and we get more good stuff and we can do more fun things. So if you're watching right now and you've not subscribed, you can click the little button in the bottom right hand corner of the screen, or you can just, yeah, just do it. 11 people, that's all we need, and it'll take us to another level. So the story,
one sec before your story,
go on.
I just want to encourage people to also do that old-fashioned thing of talking to another person. If you can think of someone that you think would like what PD does, tell them about it too. Share.
Actually,
share the joy.
Share.
If you can all bring one friend to the next podcast.
Nino, I thought you was going to say, if we hit 1,000 subscribers right now, you were going to take your shirt off. I thought that's what you
hang on. I will. Ooh. I will.
Okay.
If you hit 1,000 subscribers before the end of this, I will take my shirt off.
Okay. Let's see. We're up one. We're up to 990. Everyone, seriously. Yeah, Nemo's going to take his shirt off. So I'm going to tell the story and then I'm going to refresh. So you've probably got
your garments under it.
3 or 4 minutes.
It's too warm in the shirt for my garments
to do that. But so I was still an active member of the church, so still wore my garments, etc. My parents were the temple president and matron at the Preston Temple. So all of our family events were at the Preston Temple. So whenever we wanted to go and visit my parents and take the kids and it was just us, we'd go up to the temple and stay the night. And sometimes we took the dog. Now, we've got a small black dog. And she's a spaniel. She likes to get muddy. And the inside of the temple president's house, imagine the celestial room everywhere. Okay. It's the thick cream carpets with the carved patterns. The walls are cream. The dado rails are gold. The furniture is actually old furniture from the celestial room that has been replaced. And then they take it and put it in the temple president's house if it's still in good nick. The armchairs were from the dedication of the temple, Gordon B. Hinckley's chair. So it's a very special place. And we take this black dog. And I think my parents just wanted to see me. So they're like, yeah, bring the dog. Why not? There's cleaners that will come and clean it.
I didn't get that. Could you try again?
Sorry, Siri, no. So what happened this one night was I was staying in the apartments at the back of the temple president's house, and my dog wanted to go out to use the bathroom, and there's some lovely grounds just around the temple president's house, but there's no fence and a black dog, no lights out. So I'm calling her, and then I hear a commotion in the bushes. So I step outside just wearing my garments, hear another commotion, go a bit further. I'm going towards the temple now, and I had to literally walk into the bushes. But these bushes, for anyone that knows the Preston Temple, just on the other side of the bushes are the car parks, okay, with the temple lit up. And I literally walked through this bush and found myself stood in the middle of the night calling my dog Jess, who was having a roaring time in the car park, okay, stood in my garments in the car park at the temple, just looking up at Moroni, thinking, what is going on? And security let my dad know. He was awake when I got back, because they were like, what is going on in the car park at the temple? So, but I like to think that there will have been, a lovely sister or a brother who were at the temple at that time who saw an angel. Okay, and they've recounted that story, that testimony building story of this angel regaling the temple. Jess is in dressed all in white, you know, and the glow of the car park lights coming off of my shiny head. So,
and you know, down the lines, they'll say, oh, he said Jesus, it won't be Jess anymore. Yes. They'll change it.
Jesus. So, yeah, so that's my temple story from there. Unfortunately, Nemo, you get to keep your shirt on.
That's a real shame. I was going to go for some Adam and Eve level nudity, like here. I was just going to show shoulders up like this.
Yeah. Porn shoulders. What are you dancing with, Peter?
I could see Julian frantically creating YouTube accounts to subscribe to you.
I did consider it.
Okay.
Making up emails. Hey,
folks. Folks, there's always next time, isn't there?
Yes.
It's 1,000. Let's
hope that PD doesn't hit 1,000 before the next video.
Oh, come on. No, you've just totally reversed.
Stop subscribing. Stop it. Stop it now.
Yeah. 9 people. That's all we need. And we get to see Nemo's nips.
Whoa, hang on. No. This was a one-time thing. This was this podcast only.
Okay, well let's wrap it up.
Let us know whether you want to or not. Talking to the listeners.
This is how the Brit Avengers roll. I'm the only one who's excommunicated. I'm the only one still wearing garments.
My studio's too warm.
This podcast finished 5 minutes ago. This is the after party that we usually get into. Yeah. Maybe if we all agree one time, we can do kind of a competition for people to come into an after party.
Yes.
Not paid, just run a competition for 5 people to join us in an after party on one of the podcasts, and that'd be fun sometime.
There's a lot of nudity.
Yes. Right then. So that's it. Thank you. Thanks everyone. Thanks Big Brother, nearly 1k subscribers. Remember Big Brother, it's a flat stationary plane. Leave your tips with the PayPal link if you feel you've had a good time, and I will catch you on the next one. Thank you, you wonderful people.
See you later.
Have a good one. See ya. Bye.